Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Hour number three, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. On this Monday afternoon, it is National Best Friends Day. That's why we're doing the show today, and that's why we're also bringing in Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville. Well, we do that every Monday at noon, but especially on National Best Friends Day. Vinny, how you doing?
Wow, I get I'm show BFFs. I'm honored. I appreciate it. I'm good. Hope you guys are.
We're spreading lots of love today. That's what we're doing. Even though I look outside,
we need more of that.
Doesn't look like Mother Nature is spreading much love down here, guys. I don't know what it's like on the east side and the west side. East side and the west side where Willie and Chase are, but it's getting kind of dark here. I don't know. Is it supposed to rain today?
It's cloudy over here.
Okay. Kind of getting a little bit hairy outside. Sad news. Boy, the SEC took a hit, right, with Hall of Fame coaches and players, losing Pat Dye and Johnny Majors in the same week. Tough pill to swallow. What was the reaction there in Knoxville of the passing of Johnny Majors?
Well, really, it was the dominant topic, as you could imagine, because of how long he has been such a rock star for Tennessee athletics and, you know, the great player that many felt like should have won the Heisman Trophy in 56, but they gave it to Paul Hornung as the only player with a losing record to win the Heisman. And, you know, fans are still – feel bad about that. And then he went on to, great success as a coach at Pitt and then came back home and did great things at the University of Tennessee. So he still has stayed close to the program since then. And, you know, we had a chance on our afternoon show to, he was on weekly for about 4 years during the football season. And so fans had a chance to hear him, hear his stories, hear his amazing recall, memory, just details of him as a player. He could break down who was where, what formations, even as a coach early in his career, he could point out, you know, how this 2-point play would have changed things and their fortunes if they had not gone for two, different things like that. Just an incredible, remarkable detail of recall with his memory. And it just shows you what it meant to him, not only the sport of football, but the camaraderie and then the University of Tennessee. Charles Davis said it. He was Tennessee and Tennessee was him. And he was held in great regard at Pitt and at Iowa State for rebuilding those programs and bringing the national championship to Pitt. But it was different for the University of Tennessee. He was, you know, their native son, and other than Peyton Manning, their biggest rock star historically. So it was sad. We had so many great interviews though, and just many, many really funny stories, really just interesting stories that outlined what he was all about, because his principles were detail and commitment to winning. And he was so dedicated to those two things. A lot of the stories gave him respect for what he was all about, but then some of them were humor, which is what Johnny Majors brought a lot of, entertainment and humor as well. So it was more of a celebration, but it was obviously still sad because you feel for the family and just, you know, hate to see the world lose, lose Johnny Majors, who was such a character and so accomplished. And he lived, a number of our guests told us, he crammed a lot of years into 85. So he lived a very full life with all of his interest in the things that he did and accomplished.
One of those fantastic interviews for us last week was one of your own on WNML in afternoons on the Sports Animal and Jimmy Himes. I mean, just fond memories and obviously great stories to tell on our airwaves, and I'm sure he did that all last week there in your market.
Definitely. One of the things he shared that really stood out to me was how close Gus Manning, who worked in the athletic department, PR, things like that, at UT for so many years, and he and Johnny Majors would gig each other. Johnny Majors would gig a lot of people, but they had a great working relationship. And when even through the years, Johnny Majors would say to Gus Manning, "Hey, why you loved Paul Hornung? You're Catholic. You loved him. Why didn't you help me win the Heisman Trophy?" And Gus Manning would reply, "I had to work hard just to get you second place." So it was kind of the relationship the two of them had. And, you know, Jimmy highlighted how he had experiences in the media with Johnny Majors, whether it was, hey, one time he misunderstood Johnny Majors. He wrote it when he was writing for the Sentinel. And then he talked to Johnny Majors about it. And Johnny Majors was like, "Don't worry about it. I mumble sometimes. If you don't understand something I say, just come back to me and we'll clear it up." So, Jimmy had a lot of great stories. He, through the years, his later years, not sure anyone was closer to him outside of his family than Jimmy. Jimmy really helped him a lot. He even called him on his, as he probably mentioned to you guys, he called him on his birthday, and they had planned to do lunch when it opened up. So Jimmy was one of many great stories that we did have on our airwaves.
In fact, I think he told us he didn't even know at the time when he called Coach Majors that was even his birthday.
Yeah.
But Johnny Majors told him, "Well, that's nice of you to call me on your birthday," or "call me on my birthday."
Right.
Chase?
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, WNML, the Sports Animal in Knoxville. I got to take a little bit of a detour because you're the UFC guy, and we talk a lot of UFC with you. Before I get into Conor McGregor, what did you think of 250 overall? I watched it. I thought the card was a little bit weak, and I kind of felt like Nunez, I didn't feel like, I know, she dominated, and that fight should have ended way before it actually did. The fact that it went the distance was a shocker to me, but what did you think?
Well, I agree with that. I don't think if Spencer, at the very least, should have come out for the fifth round. I couldn't believe the corner for Spencer. They were telling her after the third round, "Hey, we're good. This is just a feeling out process. We're just getting warmed up." And I'm like, what are you watching? How has that saved your fighter? How are you protecting your fighter? She was absolutely being dismantled. She wasn't even touching Nunez, so who is clearly the GOAT. And so to bring her back out for more punishment in the fifth round, to me, was not right. I knew it was going to be a mismatch. There's no competition in either of her weight classes, and frankly, probably anywhere else. So I knew that wasn't going to live up to it. But, man, Aljamain Sterling was spectacular in his – Sandgren had been really good and hot coming in, so that vaulted him to the top of the division. And to see that Cody Garbrandt knockout of a Sensal,
that was at the buzzer.
Vicious. Yeah, right at the end of that round, and it was done, son, at that point. So there were spectacular sugar. Sean O'Malley, who was another rising star, and he took care of business. So there were spectacular finishes. It wasn't as competitive as you'd like to see, but I still think there was some entertainment value there.
Yeah, and that Apex facility is awesome. That thing is really cool that they had it at there in Vegas. That's their training facility, for those that you don't know. But Conor McGregor, do we buy it this time? He tweeted after 250 that he's retired, he's done, finito. Do we actually believe him?
Please.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For, I mean, it's just laughable.
Hey, I have to ask the question, even though I know the answer.
Right. Fair question, but I won't even take up any more time with more than that.
I mean, I read that tweet, and I couldn't get through it without laughing because I was like, yeah. Really? Like, he's just trying to take a spotlight here.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just had to get some UFC stuff in. But the cool. Vols get their first decommit of the 2021 class. Nate Evans has backed out a defensive back. So what does that mean moving forward?
Well, it's not surprising, right? We've had this topic that in a lot of fans, that's another thing that the recruiting part has given everybody a lot to talk about. And the will guys decommit? What's the class going to look like at the end? That's been a topic of conversation. And you know it's going to happen because they're still after a lot of high-level guys. So the whole upgrading or guys leaving on their own, those things are going to happen. And I don't know where this one falls just yet, but Nate Evans was one of those three-star guys that was committed earlier in the process. He has plenty of good schools that have offered him. So people get this image when we say three-star, like they're just a – you know, end of the roster type of guys. There's plenty of three stars that you look at their offer list, and it's a bunch of SEC and ACC and big level schools. So that can be a little bit deceiving. But Evans flipped from Tennessee to NC State. It's the first decommit of the 2021 class for Tennessee. They had 12 last year when in the end they finished up with a good class. So even though they have a big number of commits, this is their very first decommit that's moved on to another school. So that gives them 31 decommits during the Jeremy Pruitt era over a 30-month period. That ties them with Florida with the most in the SEC during that period. And talked about it a little bit last week. That's a once a month, one decommit per month pace to get you to National Signing Day. So still could be seven more to go. Now they'll add back. But I just think it's a reminder that this class is probably going to look a big chunk different than it looks now for various reasons. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be bad. Maybe they end up with a higher rated ranked class in the end. But I don't think it's a massive loss. There's a number of other guys at that position in the secondary, especially a corner. So it's just one of those things that you knew was eventually going to happen, and we'll probably see more of it, especially once we get a little bit closer to season when things open up a little bit. And if they do have some of those proposed evaluation periods later on after this dead period ends.
All right. More with Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, WNML in Knoxville. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Back here, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Darren McFarland. We're talking to Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, WNML in Knoxville. And Vinny, you guys put up a poll question asking the fans of which of the big four games do they think that UT has the best chance to win. September 12th at Oklahoma, September 26th on Rocky Top against Florida, October 24th, again a home game against Alabama, and then on the road November 14th at Georgia. My answer is Florida because it's a home game. I feel like that's the best one, and I'm not going to say they're going to beat Alabama until I actually see it, and even then I might go to the ER and have my pulse checked because I just don't believe it's going to happen anytime soon. But I think being on the road against Oklahoma is going to be tough. Same thing with Georgia. So my answer to that is Florida. What did most people say?
That was the case for our listeners. We put it out on Twitter, did separate polls. We did a Twitter poll. We did a website poll. And both of them came back with the same results. Florida was the one that got the most votes, actually at 50%. Then Oklahoma on the website at 33%. Then it dropped off big time to Alabama 9%, Georgia 7%. That was interesting to me that fans feel more optimistic, the ones in the poll, about a win over Alabama at home versus winning at Georgia. We've taken the calls where fans are feeling good about making cases for all of those games. And we even got, as you typically do, name one, and we got two or three. You always get those. So that just another reminder that there are plenty of fans that are feeling good, that there's no question in many fans' mind they're going to get one of those four. It's just a matter of which ones. Now, if you get one, you better not give one back that you're assuming you're going to win. And I don't think you can rule that out, even if you think they're going to win one of these games. But I agree. I think it is Florida. That's what we hear the most on the air. And both the Twitter and website polls were consistent in that order. I also think it's interesting at Oklahoma is number two and far ahead of home against Alabama and at Georgia. So just a little portion of the audience, but I thought that was interesting.
Vince Ferrara with us. We're talking University of Tennessee. Vince, in the last several days, we've all heard a lot of different perspectives on racial injustice, the whole issue, and all the issues that sort of are build the layers around that. What did Jeremy Pruitt and Rick Barnes have to say about it for people that may not have been able to hear from them?
Well, University of Tennessee did what they called Big Orange Connect, which was sort of like a town hall meeting where the fans would get a chance to submit questions in advance and then hear from a number of the coaches, Philip Fulmer, and some of the aspects of what you normally would get on the Big Orange Caravan. So that they did that on Wednesday. I thought it was very well done, broadcasted on their social media sites. And Jeremy Pruitt has been clear in his stance on it that they're mad, that everybody, all races are mad right now, and that they need to listen to their players more. And that this is unacceptable, that racism is still a factor in this country. And that he also brought up the fact that he maybe didn't understand the scope of what players had been going through and what was on on their mind and through the years. And he just kind of said, he asked himself, why didn't I know this? But they want to listen to their players. They will listen to their players. They've already put T. Martin in charge of kind of a task force to pursue action, and they believe in it. I took Jeremy Pruitt by his word. He was very adamant that this is unacceptable in this country, and so that's the route they're going, is to not just talk about it, but listen to their players. Allow them to have a voice, and then how do we help them project that voice and help society and make a difference towards Black Lives Matter and removing racism in this country? And then Rick Barnes, he talked about how the personal side of it for him. He has a couple of adopted grandchildren that are Black. And he worries about what life is going to be like for them growing up and them having fear in where they go, which is the case for so many, unfortunately, in this country right now. So he brought it back to him as an example that, look, this is a concern that a lot of us have, but we have to this has to stop. We have to change. And so those are a couple of the more noteworthy, conversations about that. But I think Jeremy Pruitt especially has handled this. He handled the pandemic, those things. He said the right things without a doubt.
And let me also single out Rick Barnes, because I'll be honest. I've watched his teams play for many, many years, but I did not, I didn't know much about him. And when he got the Tennessee job, I've really come to enjoy his perspective on life, even going way back before this. I think he's always been very thoughtful about a lot of things, and you can tell there's a lot of layers to him. So I'm not surprised at all. That's great perspective with the adopted grandchildren. Great stuff. I have to tip my hat.
No doubt. He's willing to talk about those things, whether it's big picture basketball, big picture life. He's a man of faith, and he doesn't apologize for that. And so he's willing to have those conversations with you, which is, you know, always a good thing.
How did the Big Orange Connect go? I'm thinking back as you're talking about it, Vince. We've done so many shows over the years from different stops on the Big Orange caravan at this time of the year, in one place or another, in Franklin, in Nashville. You know, we've been a lot of them. But so this was probably a little bit different. But so how did it go? And what else came out of it?
Well, Philip Fulmer was asked about fans in the stands at Neyland Stadium this fall. And he said, well, we don't know that right now. He said, we're continuing in a positive direction, but no decisions have been made. And that's just taking a conservative approach on it, because I do think it is moving towards getting fans back, but we don't know at what percentage right now, and they're working on all those. He also was obviously asked about how the players are starting workouts today and what that's like, the process of getting them back on campus. And been videos out that UT has put out of different players checking in, and, you know, the screenings and things like that, and the testing that they're doing before they ever get onto campus. And he talked about how they're going to, you know, have heavy measures of social distancing in there, not have a lot of people at one time, not sharing weights, wearing masks, things like that. And just a reminder to fans that think the players are coming back, these are workouts. These aren't practices. You're not going to see those for a while. And just like on the high school level, they've started locally as well, where they're able to do some drill things, and you know, they're not going to share footballs, that kind of stuff. So he just outlined some of those things. And Jeremy Pruitt, one of the interesting things that he said in his interview with Bob Kessling is that the freshmen, and he's mentioned this before, but he alluded to it in more detail. He said that the freshmen, he doesn't think that the incoming freshmen will be hampered or prevented from being able to play early on or compete for playing time or starting positions because of the pandemic. And a lot of us would think, well, surely they're going to have an even bigger setback. He feels like because they've been able to do more virtual coaching than they would normally be able to do, they wouldn't be able to do any football stuff with the players right now. They could work out and do, you know, 7-on-7s and things like that and strength and conditioning. But in terms of the football aspect, because they've been able to continue to do those things, they're actually teaching more now. And he feels like with the players that they have and how dialed in they've been, that it's actually been a good thing for them and cancel it out. Obviously, you're going to have the physical aspect of when you get it back, but the notion of, oh, they're freshmen, they're not going to be able to contribute because of the pandemic and the stay at home, he does not feel that way. And he, again, comes across as very comfortable in it. He also real quick told us said a great Johnny Majors story. He said the first time he met Johnny Majors, he came into his office, they talked football for about an hour, and at the end, Johnny Majors told Jeremy Pruitt, lean forward on your chair. So he did. And Johnny's like, no, lean forward. So they kept going back and forth, and they're finally just a few inches apart, and Jeremy Pruitt's thinking, I hope nobody walks in. We're just a few inches from each other's face. And then Johnny Majors leans back and says, okay, I'm good. And he said, I needed a look in your eyes. We're going to be fine. So that left an impression on Jeremy Pruitt the first time he met Johnny Majors. So those were a couple of things. He also mentioned in terms of Rick Barnes on EPONS that it's still going to be a while for them to make that decision. But he always felt like Pons wanted to get more information while still having the mindset of coming back. But he has not made that decision, and obviously it'd be a big one if Tennessee is able to get the SEC Defensive Player of the Year back.
Here's my last one, and you guys may all want to chime in on this, but I'm really curious. We were talking to Jimmy Himes about this last week, and he made no bones about it, that Philip Fulmer and Johnny Majors never really did come back around. And, you know, that's not any news. Everybody's known that for a long time. I'm just curious, deep down, I don't know if Coach Fulmer has ever really come out and expressed any regret about that, that he wishes it could have been different, things like that. Has he made any comments like that?
No, not publicly. You know, maybe in confiding to some people he may have, but not publicly that I've seen. It seems like they're still the, you know, the unfortunate part of it, or resentment, or however you want to phrase it, is more towards Coach Majors than Coach Fulmer. I don't know where those levels are. That's just, you know, because we haven't really heard Philip Fulmer talk about, you know, that incident much. And, you know, Coach Majors, it was one that, you know, I think you could just kind of tell that that's still something that bothered him. With his memory, that it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. And he loved Tennessee so much, and it was unfortunate the way that went down. But I haven't heard Philip Fulmer speak to it in detail, other than saying, like he did last week, and complimenting Johnny Majors and taking the high road on it, but not any details, will it?
Vince, end with the you brought him up, I think it was last week or the week before, kind of like this social media phenomenon, this coach. And it's like on video games. There's a lot of people that don't know the story behind that. Can you kind of enlighten us and our listeners on that?
I mean, I'm not an expert on it. I see a little bit on social media. I know it's from an NCAA video game,
right?
And Barstool Sports put it together. So apparently there was a lot of reaction last night because Tennessee lost in the national championship game
to Virginia Tech.
Right. And then there was a whole lot, like Lane Kiffin was chiming in, and, you know, Brett McMurphy from Stadium was reporting that Tennessee has rescinded their long-term agreement with Coach Duggs, and, you know, all these kind of things. And even Tennessee football was all over it. So it's gotten a lot of traffic, a lot of play, taking up a lot of people's time and interest while there's not live football and a lot of live sports going on. But I haven't followed it closely, but just knowing what some of the reaction was on it, basically, that's basically the gist of it.
Isn't it crazy? I mean, Coach Duggs is just a, you know, something. I mean, Big Cat is just something. It's turned into this social media phenomenon. He's just something created on a video game. It's amazing how this is taken up.
When I started seeing it, I was like, what am I missing? Who is this guy?
That's exactly what I did. I was like, yeah. I don't remember them hiring Coach Duggs.
Who's Coach Duggs?
Who's Coach Duggs? When I first started seeing all this, and then, you know, obviously you dig a little deeper and you're like, what in the world? This is something created and it's getting this much attention? Yeah. Holy cow. So anyway, well, thanks
They're smart. I'm sorry. They're smart to involve Tennessee, because Tennessee fans, they will react, and everybody knows it, whether it's a real story or not. Tennessee fans will react. So it was a smart business play to involve UT for sure.
No doubt about it. Thanks for the visit. As always, you have a great week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
All right, you guys do the same. Lawrence, appreciate you having me.
Vince Ferrara, the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Vince Ferrara for talking with us on this Monday. Good stuff from him. We're going to head to Las Vegas coming up in the final hour. And as they've opened up, what it has been like for them to open up. What does that scene look like? And do we believe they may be indeed one of the two hubs for the National Hockey League? A lot of you have heard us talk about rocknashville.com. There's a lot of local businesses here in Middle Tennessee that are open, speaking of open, and they're ready to serve you during these times. You can help out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery/pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and so much more. We've got this, Nashville. Go support your local businesses. That is a good message to have. Visit rocknashville.com. So let's try this again. Willie, how was your weekend in Atlanta? Take two. Ready, action.
Well, it
okay.
Like
I think we're going to get somewhere.
Times, yeah, we're actually going to have an answer rather than the equipment not being on and me sitting in the room next to this. But it was an interesting experience. You know, we were very cautious going down there. We asked all kinds of questions, and you guys remember we had some pretty detailed discussions with some different people, different perspectives on how they felt about starting up youth sports in a return to play situation. Georgia officially opened up on June the 1st, which meant that all of the tournaments that were scheduled could theoretically be played. And so the teams had to decide, are they ready to go? Now, our particular team had only been practicing for a few weeks and had only played one scrimmage. So, you know, playing four games is what we played. Five would have been the maximum. You know, our pitching staff, you know, that was tough. You know, the pitchers were only ready to throw one or two innings at a time. So we had to have a serious staff contribution there. But it was just great to get out on the field. The complex, which is called the Lake Point Complex, PBR is the organization that runs it, Prep Baseball Report. I mean, it is a first-class facility. And, Darren, I think someday if your son Maddox keeps playing, you'll probably go down there at some point to play a tournament. It is tremendous. It's about 45 minutes or so north of Atlanta, depending on the traffic, I guess. So it takes a little less time.
This is the place we were talking about the other day, right?
Yes, exactly. And I have to say, I give them a lot of credit. They put a lot of information out on their website about some of the things that they wanted to do to be very conscious of the virus. They did make all the players and parents sign a waiver that we're taking responsibility for what happens. They did all the distancing. You could not use cash at all in the facility. It was all card. All of the employees were wearing masks. They wiped down the dugouts between every game. They went in and, you know, cleaned up. They had the staff go do that between every game, both dugouts, which was good. They encouraged teams to only have one parent or, you know, spectator, if you will, per player to try to keep the numbers down in the park. I don't know how strict they were on that.
They didn't
kick
around.
Anybody out. They just recommended it. They didn't kick anybody out, but they just asked, you know, hey, if we're going to do this and people are going to have room to feel like they're spaced out, we can't, you know, that's the recommendation.
Did they have bleachers?
They had seating for sure. And so some people chose to sit in the seats, some didn't. I put my chair down the line, as I do a lot of times anyway. Erin always sits down the line. That is automatic. She likes sitting a little bit away from the field, be away from the umps and not in the, you know, that's just what she prefers to do. But some people chose to sit, like there were teams sitting who played the next game that, you know, because there was shade there. They sat together as a group. Some were standing underneath the awnings so that they could be out of the rain or out of the sun, one or the other. So there wasn't 100% social distancing among everybody like we're seeing in a lot of places, but you had certainly room to space. So let's just hope, fingers crossed, just like today, we thought we were hoping to go to phase three in Nashville. We're not ready yet. We're just hoping that the results of these, if people are being conscious, we can move forward and have these activities without, you know, a big spike in the numbers of spreading. But I thought it went very, very well. It was obviously very warm. And so we had a good experience.
Anything else stand out about it? I mean, did they provide the game balls? Did the umpires, how did that work? Well, I mean, you're an older group, so you're what, 14-year-olds?
Yeah, my son is 14U, so these are rising ninth graders and in some cases rising 10th graders, depending on what your birthday is and what, you know, when, you know, they started along in the school process. So they did not, there was not a whole lot of.
Did the umps throw the ball back to the pitcher if it ever came to that? Pass balls? changing balls? Do they throw it back to the pitcher?
Well, I don't think so. I think the ump handed the ball to the catcher, but you know, it's, I don't know what the difference is, really.
Yeah, I don't know what
you're... But
the home plate umpire was you know, holding the baseballs like he normally would.
Huh.
So,
I was just curious.
I didn't notice anything different about the execution of the game.
What did they do after the game, the teams?
They waved to each other. Right. They acknowledged, hey, good game, but they did not shake hands.
Yeah.
You know, the players themselves, you know, they were congratulating one another if somebody did something well. Some remembered that you're not really supposed to hug or high-five, and others couldn't help themselves, which, you know, was to be expected. And these are 14-year-olds, right? I can't imagine what 8-, 9-, and 10-year-olds are doing. But, you know, hopefully little by little those habits will be in there. But, you know, I think we have to face the reality. We're going to, you know, we're balancing this out. We want to have activities. There's going to be some risk involved, but you're going to try to keep it as safe as possible. But I did admire, and they had signs. The other thing in this complex, the Lake Point, the bathrooms, very pristine. They had the, you know, you really didn't have to touch anything when you went there. The toilets flushed, you know, on movement. You know, the faucets were motion sensor too, the soap, the dryers, everything like that. So I really thought that was important, right? So that you know, you could stay clean when you're there. And they had signs everywhere reminding people.
In the dugouts?
I don't know. I didn't go in the dugout to look. I didn't see if they had it in the dugouts. I don't think they did. You know, there wasn't a dispenser or anything, but I think a lot of teams had it, and I know our team did. And they had signs everywhere. You know, you couldn't walk between fields and not see a big sign that said, hey, this is out there. This is happening. You know, awareness. Just make sure you know this is going on. We're having this tournament, but be conscious of this stuff. You know, and some people did, some people didn't, you know. But I hope that we got through it. We'll find out in the next month or two, right, the results of this. But, you know, I think we're all in a place where, you know, we want to be active, we want to move forward, we want to be outside, but we just have to be smart about it.
And do they have, because one thing I've noticed, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but at a restaurant, but a lot of the doors to the bathroom now have a where you open it with your foot, and it has a sign that points down. You can use your foot to open the door.
I haven't seen that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I saw that a couple places I went this weekend, and I went, you know, I went for a hike, and in the park I went for the hike, they had most of the bathrooms closed. They only had one bathroom really available, and most of them were roped up and closed and had signs up that they were closed due to COVID. So I know you can't do that everywhere. You got to have something available, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I have not seen that. Now, you told us in a text that the Knights faced a kid 14 years old that was throwing 87 miles per hour.
it was unbelievable.
Unreal.
87.
Yeah, we took it as a compliment because this kid the Georgia Jackets is the outfit down there. It's I think an Atlanta based or Atlanta area team, and they have, you know, a network of teams, and this kid is so good that he's a rising sophomore, so he's an older 14U, but he still qualifies to pitch in the 14U. But he's been pitching with the 15-year-old team. You know, obviously, when you throw that hard, you know, facing most 14-year-olds is taking candy from a baby. But we were the number one seed. We won all of our games in the pool play, and so we were the one seed. We're playing them, the four seed, and we're thinking, oh,
they're the four seed?
We should have a chance. Yeah, because this kid didn't play. They added a couple kids. They moved a couple kids down just specifically for the bracket play. And so I guess we should be, you know, I guess we should look at it in that way that, you know, they felt it necessary to load up their team to play us. But this kid was unbelievable. This kid's name is Jansen Kinty. And he pitched apparently in the Little League World Series when he was a 12-year-old and did really well at Williamsport. And so he's always just been one of those guys that's been really, really good for all these years. And, man, was he impressive. 85 to 87, left-hander.
Oof.
With movement.
Oof.
And he no-hit us. I mean, he just blew us away. We're a good team. I mean, I don't want to brag too much, but our team is very good. And it was a wooden bat tournament, so that was another way that they kept the games moving, because the wood bats, it gives the pitchers a better chance to do well.
I thought
it's
that
hard
was
to really drive the ball. Yeah, and you normally have some. I think they've some tournaments that were going to be metal bats have gone to wood because they want to keep the games moving.
But isn't,
man,
that good, though? Because
then
it, I mean, obviously not all these kids are going to make it to the next level, but doesn't that kind of help with that to prep and use a wooden bat?
I think so. I would have loved it. I never used a wooden bat until I was in the minors, and that was a huge disadvantage for me. So these kids are getting a great opportunity, but that was tough trying to hit an 87-mile-an-hour fastball with a wooden bat when you're 14. That was rough, and so they beat us. But this kid was good. I mean, that's
I'm assuming they won the whole thing?
I don't know. They went to the final. I think they would have taken care of the next team. I saw that team play a little bit before, so I assume that they won. But it was great to get out there. It was a good starting point. I think we could have hung with them if we played our best. And I think by the end of the summer, I hope our guys will be able to do more with that type of fastball. They just had never seen anything that hard.
Of course.
And this was their fourth game of the year. You know, they hadn't. So it's hard enough to face that at the end of the summer. But when you've never seen it before, and he threw strikes. Right, it wasn't like he was wild. He walked a couple guys, but he did not give up a hit.
I would be concerned if that was the second or third pitcher you had faced already in 2020 that threw 87 at 14. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
And to put it in perspective, and they have radar guns at this field. This was a lot of the kids' first experience to see how hard they threw, right? Which is another thing that is dangerous, because you don't want to sit there and go, ooh, maybe I can throw a couple miles an hour, and you strain your arm, or you throw too hard, you overthrow, you lose your control, all of that stuff. But the average fastball is between 70, 73, and maybe a little bit above average would be in that, you know, 75 to 78 would be better than average, and this kid's blowing that away, you know, for a 14-year, 85, 87 at 14, holy cow.
That's very impressive.
That's pretty high percentile there.
Major League Baseball draft is this week. Is that right?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Thursday.
Somebody who's going on Wednesday, from at least the mocks I've seen, is Kevin Jarvis's kid, who's projected to be a first-round pick. Bryce Jarvis, who we've talked about on the show, pitches at Duke, pitched, was it a no-hitter or a perfect game?
He pitched a perfect game.
Perfect game, yeah. Early on this season before, obviously, everything was shut down. But he pitched a perfect game, and everything I've seen, he is projected to be kind of a mid to late first round pick.
You know, he pitched at Brentwood Academy. He pitched a perfect game. I think it was against Cornell early in the season this year, and a lot of people remember this as well. It was an interesting story. He pitched for Duke in the Super Regional last year at Vanderbilt against Kumar Rocker. He pitched a great game. But he happened to go against Kumar Rocker, who threw a no-hitter that night. And by the way, this is the one-year anniversary of that game. It was
today?
1 year ago tonight. Yes,
wow.
1 year ago tonight that game happened. So you got Bryce Jarvis, who is likely going to be a first-rounder, as you mentioned. Obviously, Austin Martin from Vanderbilt is going to be one of the first four or five picks. I'd be surprised if he gets to number five. And then there's a third kid who is a high schooler from Independence High School, Robert Hassel. We mentioned the Little League World Series. He played on that South Nashville team, the team that got beat by Monet Davis. Remember, it was a famous game?
Yes.
The girl pitcher from Philadelphia.
Yes.
So he
Remember
is projected
well.
First round out of that team. And he's a Vanderbilt commit, but he's going to have the decision that many have had to make before. Like Jack Leiter last year, like Kumar Rocker, like Ryan Weathers, who we talked to his dad David about it the whole time. You know, do you sign or do you go on to college? And you really got a wrinkle in the system this year, because we know there's not going to be any minor league baseball, this year. And then what's it going to look like the next 2 years for those lower levels that he would be playing. What's better for him? But, of course, you got the money factor, as you always have.
That is a big, big thing. There's a change. Yeah. That dynamic changes, I think, a lot of kids' minds, I would think. I don't know how it couldn't. If you are a, you know, it's one thing if you're drafted, you're a high school player, and the rare ones. I mean, you have to be so incredible to come out at 18, you know, be a top five, top 10 pick. But it does happen, obviously. But, you know, they're less than 1% of who's draft eligible, right? And then the rest of you, so, you know, I don't know, what if you are a high second-round pick and you're a high yeah. schooler or whatever, and the money, you know, it just goes down, down, down the more you the later the draft goes, where maybe you thought all along you were just going to go start your professional career. Well, who knows what that's going to look like? What is the minor league system going to look like after all of this? I mean, like you said, there's not going to be minor league baseball this year. Well, guess what? It's going to have a different look next year. What is that look going to be? I mean, yeah. honestly, what levels go away? What
and
levels
where is
there?
The better place? Where is the right. better place to develop and live and, you know, and get better? Because ultimately, you've got to get from age 18 to the point where you're mature enough and ready to play in the big leagues. It shouldn't just be about the money, but it, you know, when if he gets picked, Robert Hassel is projected to be the best hitter among high school players, or at least one, you know, one of them. He's going to be right up there. So if he gets picked, let's say number 10 or number 11, you know, we're talking in the neighborhood of about $5 million. I think Ryan Weathers was the 7th pick, if I recall, and so he took the money, he signed, and he went pro. Of course, this is before you had to add in all this pandemic stuff, right? Jack Leiter was picked in the first round. He chose to come to Vanderbilt, right? Kumar Rocker, same thing. But $5 million, that's a lot. That's a lot of money, right? It's not $100,000, you know, where it might seem like quite a bit of money to an 18-year-old, but it's really not. $5 million is legit, although remember the taxes, and remember, you know, your advisor, and you're only 18. You're not going to make hardly anything in the low minors the next 3 or 4 years if you're lucky enough to make it to the big leagues when you're 22. So how much of that are you going to have left? It's not as easy a decision as you might think. So that'll be something to watch to see what he chooses to do. But a great, great player and a guy who could be a pitcher too. I mean, he throws 90+. He was a guy I was really looking forward to. I was going to see if his team made it to the state championship there. I was looking forward to maybe seeing if I could watch him on the big stage on the high school level, but we know what happened there. But we certainly wish him luck for whatever he decides to do.
Well, this is the tough part of being a general manager in Major League Baseball, because if you have a high pick or, you know, whatever, anything in the first round, and you are considering one of these high school kids, you've got to be making the call and saying to them, what's the deal? Are you plan on starting your professional career? Or are you going to college? Like, we need to know. Have you changed your mind?
And if you're 18, how can you know? Like,
right.
How can you I know?
For
I mean,
people
that's
who
hard.
Don't understand, they don't get to keep their – they don't remain their property. If they go back into the draft for the next year, they get redrafted.
Right.
So it's not like it's, well –
he can't go for 3 years, right? He would – if he goes to Vanderbilt, then he doesn't go back into the draft for 3 years.
Right. I'm saying the team, though. You don't want to
yeah,
be
the team,
taking
the team gets 12th, a compensatory
a high
pick.
School kid,
yeah.
And then the high school – you draft him, and you just spent the 12th pick on the draft, and the kid goes, you know what? I think I'm just going to college. You know, you're out. You just lost the 12th pick. Now you'll get a compensatory pick, right?
But yes, extra pick the next year. It's not quite as high, but it's a pretty high pick. I think they throw it between the first and the second round.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
I think that's right.
But it's not what you want. So what's happening, I'm sure, and what has been happening, I would guess there'd be a lot of communication between Robert Hassel, his family, his inner circle advisors, and probably a team that calls and says, hey, you know, Robert, if we take you with pick number X, would you sign for this money? Would you do it? They're going to try to get that information
yep.
if they can and say, hey, we'll take you with that pick if we have your word, right? And at the same time, he's got to be having conversations with Tim Corbin, saying, hey, here's how I feel. And Tim Corbin's been down that road many times before, right? He has his philosophy on why the college experience is a really beneficial one, even though you're putting aside the opportunity to make a lot of money now in the short term. And the track record has proven how many guys have come through that program and come out better on the other side for having done it. So from what I'm told, I mean, this kid's a really good kid, and he has been conscientious about everything there. So it'll be something to watch for sure.
Corbs, that road well traveled by him for sure. We'll come back and head out west. We'll check in Las Vegas. We'll do that to start the fourth and final hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase, that's next.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.